I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, Ruby Tuesday. Welcome to a new episode of the Football Ramble. It is Tuesday, 30th of June. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Vidushan Hantharaja.
Hello, everybody. Andy and Vish, good to have you, boys. Everybody keeping well? Everybody good?
Great, thank you.
Vish?
Yeah, very well, very well. I started the morning with my iPod on shuffle, and it kind of took me on a journey that I didn't expect to go on, so I'm very excited.
Is there a day that you're not shuffling, Vish?
No, not really.
No. I think you'll find I'm always shuffling.
I'm a really bad listener and accruer of music, so I kind of cherry pick from albums. And a result, if I do get an album whole, I'll only listen to the two or three songs. And then by chance, I might come across an album track that are generally better than the singles, aren't they? Especially nowadays.
So what was the journey?
So it started kind of offhandedly because I was getting ready for the Football Ramble. So I did World in Motion.
Right. Oh, excellent.
And I kind of set it off, and it took me to DMX, a bit of Destiny's Child, and and from there it was just wonderful. A bit of Beach House, and
blimey, that's sort
kind of forgetting where I was. Yeah,
you'd need Bob Monkhouse to join those lot together. Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
I'd love to hear DMX on an England World Cup song. Yeah. Maybe that's the 5% England are lacking to get over the line in a major tournament.
Are we down to 5%? Are we?
I reckon.
Tell you what.
It's pretty much a home tournament, the next one, isn't it?
I didn't realise we'd improve that much.
I'll tell you what, though. World in Motion does date the England football team because it's so full of hope and joy.
Yeah.
And we don't really have that anymore.
Ah, oh, but we had Gary Lineker up front in those days, you're forgetting.
Yeah.
And Des Walker at the back, come on. That's why there was hope, Fish. That's why there was hope. You know, today, ladies and gentlemen, is the day that Alan Pardew's contract expired at Newcastle United. How about that? Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah, stunned them into silence, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you think he's marking that in any way?
I don't know.
He would be if it hadn't have been a case of him getting a month's notice on being removed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he might think, oh, maybe I should go and get another job now.
Perhaps.
Because, you know, sometimes on your phone calendar, there's things you've forgotten that you've decided you weren't doing anyway. And then suddenly they'll just pop up.
What's he got, like... What, get trained back to London?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bury the evidence.
How different it could have been, Pete Donaldson. But gentlemen, there was a match last night. It was the Claret and Blue Derby, as it's not called. Palace against Burnley. Obviously, Burnley won 1-0. It was a good win for Burnley. Keeps their hopes of Europe alive while dashing Palace's Vish. What do you think? Burnley in Europe? I mean, Man City, of course, if that ban is upheld, we could see Burnley back in the Europa.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, really. I don't know how Burnley do it. I think many people have tried to explain it, and Sean Dyche in particular has relished the fact that people often, you know, are waiting for them to fail, really, aren't they? Just a remarkable effort, and you know, for Ben Mee as well to score the winner after the week he had. You know, the way he came out and made those comments after. That banner flew over at the Etihad, and for him to score, I think it was his 300th game as well.
That's right, yeah.
And then,
for the club.
And then, you know, in his second pretty incredible post-match interview, he mentioned about how his daughter was 16 weeks premature or something like that, and she's now 6 months old. Mm-hmm. Sorry, no, 6 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of a great day for Burnley and also for Ben Mee as well, who really does come across as one of the good guys.
Mm. Yeah, it was a lovely taken goal, Andy. I mean, you mentioned Sean Dyche. Oh, actually, talking to DMX and Sean, I'd like to have him and Sean Dyche have a conversation. That'd be a sort of a gravelly
affair. Gruff.
Yeah.
You need to get some vocal zone involved, wouldn't you? Yeah.
At least featuring Sean Dyche.
Yeah.
What do you make of Dyche, all the chat about him potentially leaving at the end of the season?
It's one of those things that... It takes a fallout to get us into this sort of conversation because he's so perennially underrated and he's seen as so part of Burnley, isn't he? He's never linked really with other jobs, despite having done an absolutely incredible job there.
So you think he's underrated, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Do you think he could? Because the chat would be he wouldn't be able to take those skills. I'm making him sound like Liam Neeson now. He wouldn't be able to take what he's got and then apply it to a different club who are equal or better or bigger than Burnley.
Well, we don't know if he doesn't go to that other club. I mean, he's been pretty much faultless there. And I think the interesting thing about Burnley at the moment is, you know, I don't think if you go back to before lockdown, you would look at them as like one of the must-watch teams on the return. But you think of everything that's happening there, the fact that they're pushing towards the Europa League, of course, the way that, as Vish says, they've reacted to what happened at Manchester City. The fact that there's this internal conflict there as well between the chairman and the coach. I mean, I don't know if I'd go as far as to call them must read about the day after, perhaps. But there's a lot going on there, isn't there?
There is.
Even the way they've had this spat out in the open has been quite dignified.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I think so. You know, Sean Dyche was asked about it, and I think it was put to him that, you know, it's everyone kind of knows about this issue he has with the chairman and with the board in particular at Burnley. And he said, well, to be fair, I've been there 7 years, and to have only one dispute in that time, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for that. I think it's really interesting that it seems that the crux of the issues are around the finances of the club. And they're kind of, I suppose, a breaking point here where he wants to take them a bit further, but they can't commit to what he would need to take them a bit further. And I think it's quite telling that Dwight McNeil's the player who's, I suppose, essentially this seems to be centered around. And the reason I say that is because he's been touted for a move elsewhere, and Dyche is kind of resigned to that fact. But it's interesting that some of the clubs he's linked to, as well as the top clubs, are the teams currently below Burnley, including Everton and Palace, who they beat yesterday. So it probably shows where things are with their situation, that one of their prized assets, who's been a huge part of why they've had this run this season, is going to go to a team who won't be able to replicate their kind of structure or their kind of ethos in any, you know, knowing way.
I always think when I look at a situation like Dyche and Burnley, it was a very specific situation, as you say. You know, he'd been there for a while, and he's, you know, they've gone down, but they've brought him back up. And
you don't know where one starts and the other ends. A bit like Atletico and Diego Simeone.
I suppose it's
hard to imagine Burnley post Dyche, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I wasn't going to say Simeone and Atletico, I was going to say Alan Kirbishley and Charlton, because I feel that's a better comparison. But if you remember,
retro reference for the younger listeners.
But you remember Charlton were in the top flight for years, and they had sort of varying degrees of success. But I mean, you know, if you think about where Charlton are now, I mean, I know they've been to hell and back with the owners and so on and so forth, without getting into that. But under Kirbishley, and it was going, it was beginning to go bad under Kirbishley in terms of results and so on. So I appreciate that. But he had the club, and he kept them there. And Pardew was obviously there as well for a little time. And when Kirbishley left, if my memory serves me correctly, forgive me, Charlton fans, if I've got this slightly wrong, but when he left, that's when sort of Charlton, they were dropping a little bit anyway, and then they went, and we haven't seen them since in the top flight. And I would fear maybe for Burnley that without Dyche, could that be the start of a bit of a decline? Stoke under Pulis would potentially be another one.
Yeah, I suppose it's a difficult balancing act, isn't it? Because he has been there an extraordinarily long time for modern coaching, really. And you know, you have even Klopp at Dortmund, like, ran out of ideas and ran out of road there. And you know, he's someone who is still mourned there to a certain extent. They miss him, they miss his warmth, they miss his personality as well as the success. So I think it is really difficult, but Burnley are in a really difficult zone anyway, because they're one of those clubs that, as you were saying, Vish, have established themselves, I think, beyond expectation.
I should correct myself, because my memory suddenly kicked in. I thought actually Mark Hughes did all right at Stoke after so sorry about that. But yeah, carry on, Andy.
I think you get to that point where there is a very firm ceiling which you're not going above, and what do you do after that? I mean, I'm sure I mentioned this before, but you talked about Charlton. I remember speaking to a friend many years ago who's a Charlton season ticket holder, and telling me he hadn't renewed for the coming season. I said, well, why is that? He said, well, it's boring, isn't it, finishing in seventh in the Premier League every year? And like, when you look at Charlton now, but it's true, isn't it? Like, if you're Burnley, or if you're Swansea, like, how much further is there to go? And that is something that's accentuated even more in the modern Premier League, where you've not got a big three or a big four, you've got a big six or seven.
But I understand what you mean, and I get that. But then surely the example of Leicester City gives one hope that you can sort of kick on.
Well, that's an outlier. That's not something that happens all the time.
Yeah,
I think people need to look at that Leicester season and realise how many other teams fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
With all due respect to Leicester, that is how Arsenal are one side who should look at that season and think, what have we ruined here? Because it'll be a while till they
won the league, Vish.
No. I'm not taking anything away from Leicester, but I think it's really important when we use Leicester as an example of how smaller teams can do well, we look at how perfectly structured that Leicester side were, and also how bad the other sides were.
But I'm also looking at Leicester currently in this season. You know, in the sense that if you build and you hang on in there, you never know.
But
you get more investment.
They were never going to do it, were they? Sure.
But going back to Andy's point about, say, Charlton or finishing seventh. Finishing being the seventh best team in England isn't a bad achievement, you know. But anyway.
No, but that's not it, is it? It's not that it's a bad achievement. It's a great achievement, but it's how it feels and the sense that you feel you should build on it. Or what? You know, what do you do? It's like when you've got to the end of a computer game.
I do take the point. I would be concerned for Burnley, as I'm sure a lot of people would, if Dyche was to leave. Where he would go would be interesting.
Atletico Madrid.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
I'm into it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no one's going to turn around and say the football's crap, are they?
Oh, come on, Andy, come on.
I do think that one thing that Burnley might be aware of is what's going on further down the table with Bournemouth, in that they, you know, Bournemouth and Eddie Howe clearly have a great relationship, and it's probably killing their Premier League survival hopes. And, you know, we mentioned Charlton and Kerbishley, and when they parted, neither Charlton nor Kerbishley did particularly well after that. And I do wonder if, you know, while things are going well, actually maybe this is the time that they do split, when their stocks are both high enough that, you know, Dyche can get a job that he wants. And also Burnley can attract a manager that they want as well. And rather than, you know, have a bit of a dip, suddenly sack him when they're in the mire and have to, with all due respect to the bloke, you know, pull in an Allardyce out of nowhere. And, you know, you see that teams do this all the time. They get into that cycle of, shit, we should have acted a bit earlier. Now we've just got to hire relegation managers and sack them this same time next year and bring on the next guy. So look at West Ham and David Moyes. I'm not saying that Dyche should go. I'm not sure Burnley should, you know, point the gun at him. But if you're going to make a change when it's going well.
And if he did leave, you know, Marco Silva would be up for it. You know, he'd be there. He'd be back, Andy.
Marco Silva's agent is playing an absolute blinder at the moment. He was linked with a Benfica job last week. And there were stories in all the Portuguese papers the following day going, oh, there are a load of clubs in the Premier League and Germany want him. You know, just in case you wondered, Benfica, just in case you're hesitating, Benfica.
They're still hesitating, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're hesitating.
But just briefly, if we can go back to Palace versus Burnley, we've got an email here from Jack French, who says he's from South London, Andy, which I believe you are as well. A round of applause from Mr. Brassel there. Goodness knows why. He says, morning all. Having watched Burnley versus Palace, I found myself wondering why such a fantastically talented man is so happy to waste away his career in the lower echelons of football. I get that he may be content to be a big fish in a small pond, and that when people take the next step in their footballing career, it rarely works out. But are you seriously telling me there's a man, woman or child in this country that doesn't want to hear more Ali McCoist? The Scottish wordsmith is wasted on Amazon. At this point, I'd have him reading the bloody weather. He's got a point, old Jackie. He's got a point. What do you think of Coisty, Vish? Are you a fan?
Oh, I'm a huge Coisty fan. Yeah.
I don't think you're as huge a Coisty fan as Marcus.
No.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Marcus has cornered the market on Scottish pundits. Yeah. Got to like, isn't it?
As somebody put on was it Twitter or in sort of comment section or something like that, they were just waiting for him to say, well, obviously, you know, Kazan's not been the place since Ivan the Terrible ransacked it since 1555, or you know, although it's come a long way since then, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, an enjoyable email from Mr. French. Gentlemen, can we move on? Something a bit more sort of serious and important, perhaps. The Premier League the Premier League, the PFA and the EFL have launched a new coach placement programme aimed at increasing the number of black, Asian or ethnic minority players making the step into full-time coaching roles. The scheme is open to BAME, PFA members of any age. It will see up to six coaches per season being handed a 23-month work placement at clubs in the EFL. Those given placements will work in a variety of football roles at the club, most likely involving taking training sessions with different age groups, recruitment and analysis and administration. I mean, Vish, what leaps to mind when you see this? You think this is a good step in the right direction?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. I think it's important to also clarify that with regards to the people that are being brought in for these roles, I think they need to have a UEFA B licence.
Yes.
They need to be showing intent to do a UEFA A licence as well. And I think they need an FA Youth Award course or something like that. So it's not just a case of these are being kind of thrown about like confetti. They're being given to people with genuine ambitions to get into coaching who are obviously already into coaching. I do think it's a very good idea. I think it's the type of scheme that people are very suspicious of because they see it as a way of just simply filling a room with people of ethnic minorities to make it seem more palatable to wider society. When actually it's simply a way of stopping a cycle which purely is perpetuated by familiarity, no real kind of malice, whereby, especially in football, and we talk about it all the time when we discuss proper football men, people get jobs or they get opportunities because of who they now who they know.
Always be aware when you hear someone described as a proper football man.
No, of course. I mean, you know, Frank Lampard is quite a great example. Harry Redknapp put in a call to Mel Morris, who's the decision maker at Derby County, and got him that job. Now, obviously, Lampard was doing his coaching badges and things like that, and I don't think we need to kind of, you know, stride into the, or bring into the conversation what would have happened if Frank Lampard's black. Fundamentally, he had an in and he used it. And because so few players have or players from ethnic minorities have moved into administration roles or even coaching roles, you don't really get that. They don't really become part of that network. Football, we've got to remember, is one of the most meritocratic sports out there, certainly on the playing field. And it's just so that that doesn't translate to when you move further on in the game. So a scheme like this does, well, I think it's very useful, not least because even on a purely football sense, you're going to open yourself up to so many more playing pools as well. And you'd also got to bear in mind, and, you know, Andy, you're from South London. I was born and raised in West London. I've seen kind of schemes in Leicester, in Nottingham and around the country. There are a lot of minority ethnic coaches in youth football.
Yeah.
Loads. And there are loads of really incredible schemes, especially in South London, for, I suppose, not just, you know, taking football to disadvantaged areas, but also giving these coaches opportunities to coach. Mm-hmm. And so something like this, I don't think is a bad thing at all. I think we saw in 2018 as well, there was a scheme whereby these kind of coaches were given placements with the England team as well. And I think stuff like that is only gonna benefit English football as a whole in general. And so I suppose to sum up, it's a very good scheme, and I think people need to realise it's not so much about, you know, any, you know, easing kind of racial tensions or anything like that. It is purely about giving everyone a fair chance.
Well, this is it, Andy. It makes sense, actually, because, you know, we see in so many areas of society, you know what it's like if you're trying to get into the media. You're trying to, you know, a lot of creative industries, the old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that is evident in the world of football management. So actually, when you're saying, well, actually, you know, we're going to try and actually, as Official says, you know, break into new ground here, it makes sense. This is actually discovering new talent. Saying, no, we will have better talent, potentially, and better opportunities for people to become manager. Because actually, if you take the whole thing, England is not a country that's producing good managers at the moment.
No, that's right. And I think, though, the wording's quite interesting. For me, it feels like a start. But just the start for the moment. We have to see how it pans out, because even if it does cover a 23-month work placement, you know, it is paid work experience. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking at the moment, and we're talking about it being in the EFL. So where's the Premier League involvement in it? That's what I would want to know. The interesting thing about it, though, is where it talks about not just coaching, training, administration as well. And I spoke to Jason Yule for Ramble Meets a couple of weeks ago. And what I thought was really interesting, because, I mean, he's clearly keen to go on and take the next step and become a manager, as we still call them here, rather than a head coach. But he wants to take on a senior first team. But he was saying he'd worked in administration, and he'd got to know boardrooms and stuff. So he understands every level of the club. For him, it's about creating a bulletproof case about, regardless of my background, you cannot not give me that opportunity because I've got everything covered. He's got like 8 years of experience in terms of in terms of coaching at various age group levels.
He knows Alan Kirbishley.
You know, he shouldn't have to go through all that to get a chance. I think that's pretty clear. So I think in terms of visibility is something that hopefully is going to work well. But it shouldn't be that everyone should have to be a Jason Yule, that you should have to create that absolutely irrefutable, you can't deny me because I know everything about this club and I know everything about how a football club works. Because that's not the case for every coach, is it?
Yeah, it might even be an opportunity for English football to look at itself and think, God, maybe we hand out some of these roles too easily to, you know, people who just aren't good enough. Obviously, that's a conversation that is unlikely to happen off the back of this. But, you know, the reason we are in this situation, the reason we have so many, I suppose, subpar managers on that cycle, as Andy alluded to earlier, is that, you know, it's been so, or rather the net is so small, and who's allowed through, you know, the people that we're always used to. So kind of bringing in some new faces, bringing in some new blood in general will only be a good thing.
Mm. There was also calls from the PFA to address commentator bias, Andy, with some of the sort of adjectives they may use to describe certain players, certain ethnic minorities and so on. And we've talked about this a little bit on the Ramble before, and I know other people have as well, where black players tend not to be described as, you know, intelligent or having vision and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think you should think of someone like Yaya Toure.
Pace, power.
Exactly, yeah.
The word monster, yeah. used quite a lot.
And these would be, so take someone like Yaya Toure as an obvious example. I can remember at the time, you know, no one would describe him in the way they would describe, say, David Silva or Kevin De Bruyne now. Whereas actually Toure, intelligent, very intelligent player, Fernandinho, another one as well. But you talk about their physical attributes as well.
It's funny that you mentioned Fernandinho actually, Marcus, because I've interviewed him a load of times from when he was back at Shakhtar Donetsk. Mm. And he's a little bit guarded. He's not that open. I had to do something with him for television, for Champions League Weekly, probably, I don't know, 6 months ago, something like that. And it was describing his tactical journey. Mm-hmm. And we got a little, you know, one of those sandwich boards that you chalk on outside a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And plonk like one of those in front of him. And a couple of three counters, one for Brazil, mm-hmm. one for Shakhtar, yeah. one for Manchester City.
4-4-2.
And gave him a piece of chalk and said, could you draw out the pitch? Because it mm-hmm. looked really nice on the filmed item that was going into the show. And knowing how reticent it could be, mm-hmm. I had like pages of notes. Thinking, right, I want to prod him about this particular bit about Shakhtar. Mm-hmm. I want to prod him about this particular bit about when he was in his first season at Manchester City. And he took the chalk off me, drew a pitch, and it was unbelievable. I reckon in about 20 minutes, I asked him about three questions. like tactics is his thing.
Yeah.
And
but you can tell that by the type of player he is.
To that extent, it's incredible. And when you make that point about mm-hmm. black players not getting that credit, I mean, it's ludicrous mm-hmm. in the case of something like Fernandinho. You know, he is the general. You can understand why him and Guardiola click so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's interesting when you look at it from the other point of view as well. One of the things that doesn't get talked about Kevin De Bruyne is that he's actually very strong.
Yeah.
Yes, it's his pace. Why he took to the Premier League so quickly. To have a playmaker that's that fast.
Yeah.
He scored a lot of Yaya Toure type goals, actually, didn't he, in his first season in the Premier League, where he just fly beyond the striker. Mm-hmm. And there you go.
And if you look at a lot of Yaya Toure's play for Man City, it was very reminiscent of Kevin De Bruyne, even down to his crosses. You know, Yaya Toure had this incredible ability to wrap his foot right round the ball, which Kevin De Bruyne has exactly. But
he's a Champions League winning centre back as well.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. But yeah, I always find that's quite interesting. I think we actually mentioned a couple of shows ago about the way that Daniel James and Adama Traore mm-hmm. were talked about, and you know, Daniel James is a headless chicken. Adama mm-hmm. Traore is close to the finished product. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you were blindfolded and heard the way these two players were described, you think, well, only one of them's going to make it, surely. Mm. Only one of them's got all the tools. So yeah, it's a time for reflection, because I think it's something that people have been on for a while, actually. Mm. And you know, Paul Pogba is quite a good example, because, you know, like Adama Traore, he's physically quite striking. I think it's fascinating when you hear some of the French players talk about Pogba, because they always describe him as a basketball player. They always someone with a basketball player's physique, yeah. but you know, feet to die for. And I think sometimes when we talk about players, we find it hard to really compute what exactly they do, especially when they're a midfielder, because there's so much to being a midfielder. And so we always end up with someone who is physically strong, just describing him as physically strong. And that is very unproductive, especially now where you have these footballers who can basically do everything. And Paul Pogba is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. And as was Yaya Toure. But then, as I say, when you talk about someone like Kevin De Bruyne, we don't actually really mention his physical attributes. The fact that he's, you know, a bastard in the tackle as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard not to put those two side by side and come to very obvious conclusion as to why that is.
Yeah, I think, and also in this country as well, you know, we always prioritise the sort of the strong, the physical,
yeah, that's true,
and so on. You know, because actually, if you were to go back a number of years, Roy Keane's kind of physicality and his aggression was always talked about, whereas actually his sometimes his technical awareness, his positioning, and so on wasn't. But it seems that we're kind of getting towards a better place with regards to how we view and how we value certain attributes in footballers, but it hasn't translated completely across the board, as we're saying here.
Yeah, but if you're a commentator, and I know a lot of commentators are aware of this, and you've got to be very careful about choosing your words anyway.
And it's a very difficult job. I know that's not a cop-out, and that doesn't mean to say, leave the commentators alone if they use certain words. You know, everyone has to improve, but it is a really difficult job. You've tried it. Go on, Bennett.
But I think commentary is something that is more closely analysed now, because, you know, I guess it's like any part of football media. You know, that old phrase about, you know, tomorrow's headlines being tomorrow's fish and chip wrappers just doesn't count anymore. It's got a digital print. It's there forever.
Yeah.
So it's something that, you know, it's like discussing things with people who read your work or listen to your work on Twitter, isn't it? It makes you be better because, you know, you've got to directly interact with the public, and that's only a good thing.
You're absolutely right.
You've got to remember as well, it was only earlier this year that a BBC football pundit, when talking about some of the Derby County players, was, you know, described them as the young black lads, not really, you know, putting in a shift, not really doing their bit. That was, I've just got it up here actually, the 17th of February 2020.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that could have come out of the mouth of Ron Nodes at Crystal Palace. That's extraordinary.
Blimey. All right, gentlemen. Let's have a quick break, and then after which we'll talk about a little bit of La Liga. See you in a moment.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to Football Ramble Daily. I'm Marcus Speller. I'm joined by Luke Moore, Jim Campbell and Pete Donaldson. Now, with football on pause, we've taken this opportunity to look back at some of our favourite football moments where the emboldened stood tallest. We're here to discuss one of those moments thanks to Bullseye Barbecue Sauce, the number one authentic American barbecue sauce. It's full-bodied, smoky and packed full of flavour. The taste is so bold, in fact, that it reminds us of one of the boldest moments we've ever seen on a football pitch in the 2006 World Cup
final, no less. In his last professional game, Zinedine Zidane stepped up to the penalty spot after just 7 minutes and stood opposite Gigi Buffon, one of the best goalkeepers of his generation.
And that is, of course, what this match is completely remembered for in its entirety, this moment. Although, I mean, it's interesting to rewind to this point, isn't it? Because I think there's always been a bit of a theory that Zidane operates on a plane that is slightly above us mere mortals. But do you remember, obviously, watching that for the first time, you think he's missed it. You know, you think he's hit the bar. But when you see the replay back, he's chipped it so deftly. It's not even really a chip. It's a sort of uniquely cushioned kind of mega dink. I don't know how you describe it. It is a waft. That's absolutely right. It floats. And you can even see that he's got a little bit of kind of reticence there, where he's going, oh God, this is going to go in. Is it? Yeah, it's gone in. It's gone in. I'm still Zidane. I'm amazing. There is no way this can go downhill from here. But yeah, what an audacious thing to do in a World Cup final, your last game. It was just watching it back, like, it's just an aesthetic marvel the way he hits that.
It is. And I just like the way that there is, like you said, a little bit of reticence as he wheels away from the penalty spot. The fourth official is obviously looking over, and he gives it as a goal. The referee gives it as a goal. Buffon very much not in the same frame of mind. Let's make that very clear. But the thing that the person I, if I'm going to call it a person, the person I feel most sorry for in this situation is the goal net. It's the World Cup final. Mm. It's your time to shine. It doesn't even blow and get stroked. It doesn't even ruffle in the wind. And did you see a little bit later on in Enzo Zidane's career? He scored one for the Real Madrid youth team, almost exactly the same. It didn't hit the bar, but it went just under the bar, and it was a beautiful stroke. It really reminded me of Zidane's goal in the World Cup final. But as you said, Jim, it's not what we remember the final for, but it should be, because it was beautiful.
And is it fair to say that scoring one of those for the Real Madrid youth team is something that's going to please everyone, because it's not really upstaging his dad, is it?
It's really not. No.
And the one thing I noticed about it is just how brazen and how brave it is by Zidane to do that in that final, chiefly because I've always been someone who said the idea of a penalty being awarded to you is because you deserve an advantage because you've been fouled in the penalty area, of course. So don't bring unnecessary variables in. Use your technique and stroke it home. But I have to say, watching that back, I doubted my own mind, because it's so great to watch. And the final thing I wanted to add was just that you've got Buffon there, who is, as Marcus said in the intro, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time. Like, if you watch him on his warm-ups, his basics are just so solid. He's wearing a gold kit and he looks amazing. He looks like a Roman god. And Zidane is still doing that to him and still obviously scoring. It's incredible that he can even have the presence of mind to attempt it, let alone pull it off in such an amazing fashion. And the only thing that's slightly annoying is that he doesn't run away with the celebration and say, yeah, what were you worried about? Of course that was in. But it is the World Cup final. It was still ridiculous.
There was no VAR back then.
Yeah. It was so accurate that as the ball bounces back up, it hits the bar again. Like, it's a double.
That's great. That's amazing.
Twice. But you're right. There was no need for sort of goal line technology or anything like that, because as soon as it happens, actually the ball is well over the line, and the referee's assistant who's watching, and the referee immediately just go goal, and they're running back to the halfway line. But it was like an incredible end to the match. And but as you've said, it wasn't the last time that Zidane did something rather outstanding in that final. But what a moment it was, though. For France's sake, shame he didn't lift the trophy, but there we are. So, ladies and gentlemen, if this level of boldness sounds right up your street, then Bullseye Barbecue Sauce is for you. It's a full-bodied smoky sauce from the best authentic American barbecue brand around. Perfect for the food you'll be grilling all summer long. Just search Bullseye Sauce to find out more.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Before we go to La Liga, a little mention for the League Two playoff final. Exeter going down 4-0 to those impressive Northampton Towns. 4-0, Andy. Callum Morton seems to be having a lovely old time on loan from West Brom. He scored his eighth goal for Northampton. He's having a good time. I mean, they 4-0 at a very they silenced Wembley. as people have been humorously pointing out.
Yeah, and Keith Curl, great work from him. He's done a fantastic job at Northampton. I mean, Northampton have had some really interesting coaches in recent years. Of course, Chris Wilder really turned them around as well. So who knows where Keith Curl could go from here. But I did feel a little bit sad about it. I've kind of come sort of to terms with, you know, the current state of things in football. But when you get to a final at Wembley and there's
what you mean.
There's no one there. And it made me think of when I went to the League Two playoff final in 2016 when Wimbledon rolled over Plymouth. And I was watching the potted highlights of Exeter Northampton this morning with my son. And I said, it's like, you know, when Wimbledon played in that, there were 60,000 people there. He went, 60,000 people. And I was like, yeah, that's the thing you feel, isn't it? When you get to Wembley and it's
you brought 10,000 of them along, didn't you? Not the bloody Pied Piper, you were. But then, Vish, it is disappointing the fans are there. But I suppose, all things considered, they were probably quite relieved that they actually got to play the game in the end.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
being 2-0 down from that first leg in the semi-final.
Well, I was thinking about it from an Exeter City point of view this morning, actually, because, you know, would you prefer that? It would be the absolute anticlimax to get to that stage, bring all your fans to Wembley and then get demolished 4-0. But I obviously feel very, very sorry for him, but I wonder if it's slightly easier to take, because losing in the playoffs at any time is
a
horrendous experience. And I wonder, in these circumstances, is a blow a bit softened, because pick themselves up and go again next year, because, as you say, this was always in doubt.
Yeah. Think of Exeter City, Andy. Come on. They've suffered enough. Crying out loud. Speaking of suffering, let's go to La Liga. Barcelona host Atletico this evening. They need a win as they're now in second place. Of course, they drew with Celta Vigo on the weekend. According to reports, there was a big old bust-up in the away dressing room during this one. Some of the players have been critical of Quique Setién's tactics. Luis Suarez said after the match that the coaches were to blame for Barcelona's poor away form. Love that. He often blames others for things, doesn't he? Two wins from their last six matches, of course, Barcelona. But yeah, old Kike's under a lot of pressure, Andy.
It was really funny hearing Suarez say that, despite the fact that Barcelona are in this hole at the moment, where he's going, yeah, well, you know, we're taking a lot less points on the road away this season. So, you know, the tactics of the coach's job. And I thought, hang on, I'm pretty sure you spunked a 3-0 lead in the Champions League semi-final away from home last season, and the season before you did a similar thing at Roma. I mean, I remember one Catalan journalist, I think in El Mundo Deportivo, saying last season, the great thing about this second leg at Liverpool is no one's going to talk about Roma anymore. But yeah, it's a bit intellectually dishonest of him, I think it's fair to say. I love the image as well of like Messi and Setién having this huge row in the dressing room afterwards, because what they're focused on a lot on Spanish television this week is the cooling breaks. Now, the cooling breaks, I know people have got their views on them and say, oh, it takes the momentum out of the game, it's a waste of time, et cetera, et cetera. I always thought it was about hygiene and keeping bottles separate, so it seems relatively sensible to me. And it's definitely welcomed in Spain, where it's baking in some of these games.
Imagine
as well.
Imagine playing now in Andalusia.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be bad enough in March.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why they're all at the dead of night. Not late enough. I think they should probably be kicking off at midnight. But what they're focused on, particularly on Spanish television, is during these cooling breaks, they're brilliant for seeing what sort of authority the coach has got, who's speaking to who. And Setién didn't come off brilliantly. And I thought, to get a bit of eye contact from Messi, Setién's doing pretty well after the way it panned out actually during the game at Balaidos. But, you know, I think there are a certain feelings that are being pushed at Barcelona at the moment. It's like the fact that Antoine Griezmann got some stick for Iago Aspas' equaliser, for turning his back on the shot, for turning round from the wall. He was going around the wall anyway. It didn't make any difference the way that Griezmann made an effort and tried to stop it. So, I mean, Quique Setién is maybe not the ideal Barcelona coach, not anyone's real ideal of a Barcelona coach.
Certainly coming,
coach.
That seems to be the case.
But on the other hand, if you think this is where Barcelona's problems begin and end, I mean, you've not been watching the film. You've only just come in for the last 5 minutes because
a bit like Griezmann.
Yeah, they've got issues at every level, and the Artur Miralem Pjanic swap, and it is a swap, despite the creative accounting aspect of it. That is really indicative of how poorly they're run. And at the moment, Bartomeu, the president, has still got a year to run of his term, and you know they need to get rid of him. They need to sort things out.
Fish, what do you reckon of Barcelona at the moment? I mean, one of the criticisms of Setien is apparently he's deemed too hands-on during training sessions. Of course, in the current climate, that's exactly what you don't want. But yeah, he's not done too well. Barcelona in second. I mean, what do you make of the situation?
I think it's incredible how the way that players and administrators are being talked about, especially the way that the players are, you know, maybe without them knowing, but essentially a lot of people from the outside are blaming the players. And I don't think they really, get that, because they think, well, you know, I'm Luis Suarez, you know, Lionel Messi, where, you know, we've got this. We've done this before. We've earned this club success. Whereas they just sound like Real Madrid from, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It sounds like an absolute mess. And it's really interesting because we often talk about when teams are doing well, you know, us on this side as journalists, we're often the first to talk about the process and what they have behind the scenes and how, you know, Masia and things like that, and how teams are building towards something greater, and this is the start of an era of dominance. And you realise that when teams are winning, they can say whatever the hell they want, because as soon as things go awry, you get situations like this where from top to bottom, the club seem completely rotten. I think the Griezmann thing was fascinating from the outset, because even then it had the veneer of them building towards something, and the fact that he was going to be their new focal point. And then very quickly after that, it became, well, we could get Neymar back, couldn't we? And as soon as they started talking about getting Neymar back, you knew there was something up there. And, you know, Xavi coming out and saying that he'd happily come in. And
I love that.
But that reads to me like someone from the outside who looks at the situation and thinks, well, you know what, I can pluck at these particular heartstrings here, because it happened before with Guardiola where they were lacking a bit of identity. And he came in, and obviously he was already in the club and knows the club well, but it was the perfect PR move, wasn't it?
Because
he
started to go sour under Frank Rijkaard, although he brought success. But with Xavi Hernandez, it's interesting because he'd already been sort of offered the job, or there was chats that he could take over a little bit previously.
Please don't call him Xavi Hernandez. When you use the full name, it feels like he's being told off.
Yeah, but
I thought that as well. Yeah,
but I think he might
sat up in my chair.
Yeah, but I think moving into the coaching, I think we're going to have to call him Xavi Hernandez. He's not the Xavi the player, you know. Yeah. In the same way, if Neymar went to coaching, like, we'd have to call him Neymar Junior.
It's a bit like Guti, who got sacked from Almeria last week, the third coach they sacked this season. He wasn't having being called Guti as a coach. He's Gutierrez now. It's Gutierrez.
Oh, I see. Oh. But yeah, with Xavi, Mr. Xavi, saying that he wasn't quite ready for the role. You know, this was in January, was it, when there was a sort of chat around Xavi potentially taking the role? I forget when. I think he probably thought to himself, I'll just wait until the situation's a bit shitter, and then I'll come in, because, you know, I'll really wait for it to really get a little bit. And if he is doing that, you've got to hand it to him. Did you see? I mean, surely, Vish, you can see him going in there and taking over at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've just described him like the bloke in like a detective drama series. He's just the last one in, and it gets everyone else to clear out.
Yeah,
but he's just poking the body with a stick.
But a bit like,
he's been shot here. But straight in the head. Yeah, he's dead. Definitely dead.
Told you he's dead.
Isn't the thing with Xavi though that he loves a pound note? Isn't he really
well with his cat?
What past career move has got you to
Guardiola conclusion? Could be seen as that. Yeah, yeah. There's a number of players.
But don't you think the whole problem with Barcelona, Marcus? I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say on this. They're so wedded to the past. And that's been the whole problem with Griezmann, that the cards are stacked against him because he's from outside the magic circle. And that's the thing. They've been so deeply, and a lot of, I think, global Barcelona fans, they've been so deeply unappreciative and in many cases very hostile towards Ivan Rakitic, who has not just been a player who's been a brilliant signing for them because he had a huge role in them winning the Champions League in 2014-15, which was the last time they won it. Absolutely. But like he's a player they've lent on, even when they've been trying to get rid of him, in the last season. They've lent on him a lot this season. Mm-hmm. He came on and he scored the winner against Athletic last week when absolutely nothing was happening. And it really underlined why he's so useful for Barcelona. Because that goal, you had Messi trying to get through this packed defence with the ball. Rakitic just steams in and goes, you know what, I'm going to Brian Robson this shit. It just goes through the centre, smashes it in the corner. And because he's from outside the loop, because he's from outside the magic circle, it's why he works so well for them. Now, of course, he's someone who has got a very varied palate. He's got a great football personality because you think he's this guy from a Croatian family who grew up in Switzerland. Then he went through this brilliant academy at Schalke and played in loads of different positions. Then had this finishing school at Sevilla where he really clicked, and then arrived at Barcelona. And it's precisely because he didn't come up through La Masia why he's so useful to them. But you know what? Because Barcelona, and especially Barcelona under Guardiola, is this cult. It's beyond a brand, isn't it? There's this resistance to outside ideas, especially at a time when things are going wrong.
But the problem is, well, not the problem, the thing is, though, is that, you know, we think of Barcelona having the kind of previous successes, say, Real Madrid have throughout history, and they haven't. We have seen their best years as a club. I mean, phenomenal years, you know, in this decade, under, you know, even under Rijkaard, I would want to bring him into that.
But can we think of the Guardiola years as the normal?
But exactly. No. Guardiola years, and then even Luis Enrique, as well, winning a treble.
Yeah.
You know, these are like by far and away the best years of the history of this club, and they only happened a few years ago. So there's still that very, very deep shadow looming over everything that they do at the club because of this.
Yeah, and I think the Guardiola years, it wasn't just success, but it was exactly what they wanted from a football team. And I can appreciate actually that from top to bottom. That would be really hard to get over. So
success is overrated. What you want to do, you want to be the seventh best team in your country, and then your jobs are good.
Well, there's a lot to be said for that, isn't it?
Well,
you realise this.
I knew I'd get you to come round on that.
But just a game that brings us all so much joy is kind of ultimately joyless because even, you know, the teams who seem to crack
it. We're in the Football Ramble. Good night.
The teams who seem to crack it, the teams that seem to thrive in it, are never happy.
Yeah.
You know, even just you talking through Rakitic's CV there, you really struggle to see what more they'd want from an outsider.
Well,
the thing is, when they wanted to get rid of him as a make-weight last summer, even though he's into his 30s now, so many clubs were interested. When they were trying to piece together this Neymar deal, and they were going, Barcelona were saying, who were terrible at negotiating transfers, were going to Paris Saint-Germain. Well, I tell you what, we'll include Rakitic, and he's a make weight of say 60 million euros. And Leonardo was okay, you know, because he's rated everywhere.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's actually a good point. Barcelona are underrated at how bad they are at dealings in terms of the transfer market.
Yeah. I mean,
Coutinho, you know, how much.
But you go way back to Zlatan and Eto.
Yeah.
You can't just say it's the current regime.
Sure.
Henri wasn't a great signing, to be fair.
But they did win. But he was in that first season under Guardiola.
That first season, he did a lot.
Yeah.
And the season before that, he was an integral part of the team that applauded Real Madrid on the pitch after they'd won the title before they absolutely smashed Barcelona in the Clásico.
Well, we're looking forward to them playing Simeone's Atletico this evening. Andy, a side that you don't like in terms of their playing
talking
style.
Of aesthetic beauty. Perfect link, Marcus.
Yes.
You always have the perfect link.
But that beautiful red and white stripe with the blue shorts makes up for it.
Yeah, and Diego Costa is back to his most bastardish, can we say?
I think we can. I think you have.
He looks very lean now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does.
Yeah, all that anger is just, it burns calories. The leaner he gets, the more angrier he is. That's how you can tell.
Just sat in his home during lockdown, rocking back and forth, burning calories.
Has he been flouting the rules? Let's not suggest that because it could get us in a hot, soapy bubble. Andy, the Bundesliga is done and dusted. You wrote a piece this week saying that they seem to be quite relieved in Germany and they were quite pleased with what they've done.
Yeah, they are. It was interesting because normally when you have the title party at the end of the season, firstly, there's loads of players going around showering each other in beer and showering the coach in beer and all the rest of it, which is clearly not allowed in the current under the current hygiene protocol. So you had Bayern celebrating on the pitch, not even at the Allianz Arena, but on the pitch of Wolfsburg, that most atmospheric of stadiums, the Volkswagen Arena.
And, say that as if we all know, Andy.
It was, yeah. And it was a really strange title party. But normally, when the CEO of the Bundesliga, Christian Seifert, comes out, you know what it's like. When a dignitary comes out and says something, a trophy presentation, it's like, right, okay. It's kind of like the second support band at a gig. It's like, you know, it's a clause that we've got to fulfill. You know, we'll barely put up with it, but, you know, let's get it out of the way. But it's interesting because of the hygiene concept with which the Bundesliga came back, the fact that Christian Seifert came up, and because the celebrations were relatively subdued, Seifert's speech was actually center stage. People were really looking forward to hearing what he had to say. And he thanked the players, the clubs, and the fans for, as he said, taking the first step to saving the 36 professional clubs of Germany. Now, there are fan groups who will think that A, finances are overrated, and B, he's exaggerating. But there were clubs in serious financial trouble who really needed this money to get to the end from the TV deal. And of course, they're the first league, as I think we said last week, to sign a post-pandemic TV deal, which was a little cut on the last one, but they're pretty pleased that they've got more or less a status quo. I think they're losing 240 million off the previous TV deal over 4 years. They're still getting 1.1 billion a year, which is all right, I think, they feel in the circumstances. But when you're talking about clubs having to rearrange and go forward, I mean, Schalke have already said, well, we're going to cap earnings for 2.5 million a year for any individual player going forward. I mean, that is a major rearrangement of things. And especially when you bear in mind, Schalke, I never tire of saying it, you've got to understand, they're an enormous club. They get 60,000 people in every other week. So for them to say that...
It's like a playoff final at Wembley when you're... <Yeah.
laughs> For them to say that, obviously it's a partial acknowledgement of how abysmally they've been run, and not just in this little period, but going way, way back. But it is a sort of reality bites moment as well.
Yeah. Is there a sense of pride from those in Germany, not just how they've brought it all together, but I suppose the leadership they've shown in football in general? Because they're often, you know, referred to as the one that really showed, you know, La Liga, Portugal, and the Premier League that it could be done and how it could be done.
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of that. There's a definite feeling though amongst fans and players we've got to go on and take the next step now. That can't be the end of it, because fan groups, of course, but also players groups, like the players have formed a new alliance. They say not to replace the current players union, but to work in a sort of complementary sense with it. It's led by Mats Hummels, Alexandra Popp, who plays for Wolfsburg as well. She's involved. I think that's a really great thing. The fact that you've got professional players in the men's and women's game, getting together and going, you know what, in future, this hygiene concept, maybe it was necessary in the circumstances and we'll put up with it for the good of football. But going forward, we're not just going to be told what to do. When the game is reshaped and, you know, the fans feel that, and the fans have formed a new group, Unser Fußball, which is our football, they're like, football has to be more sustainable. It can't go on just being in a situation where it stops for 2 weeks and it's on the brink of financial collapse. And the players are saying, well, we want to have our say in it as well. And where I think this is going to be really pivotal with the players is because, and Hansi Flick has come out and supported them. He said, look, the players need a decent holiday for next season. We can't just be saying, right, okay, we've got it back on the road now. Mid-September, we're off like normal. And he's already said, well, look, basically, he's strongly hinted, my players are not going to turn out for the international games at the start of September, because scheduled as they are, it's ridiculous. They'll get about a week off.
We all need a holiday, let's be honest.
Has it been that bad over the last 45 minutes, Marcus?
Some been quite more fun. Than others.
That was not a comment. That was not a comment on your magnificent chat on German football there, Andy. Vish, I'd like to end with this, and I want to get your opinion on this. Newcastle United are having a look at a certain Montpellier forward, 19-year-old Thomas Robert, available on a free this summer. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the son of Laurent Robert. Thomas Robert, come on. Come on. What are you thinking?
Some questions. one, is he any good?
Can he hit a free kick?
No, it doesn't matter. Actually, that doesn't matter.
I don't think that matters.
Is he left-footed? I like to think that is passed down a generation.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of rifle. I like the idea that when he was in the room and he kicked, and like, bloody hell, right, that is your son. And also, because it's Newcastle, I would like to think, or certainly in my head, and I don't want you to correct me, but in my head, there are two Robert boys.
Is that a good position for a journalist to be in? No, I don't want you to correct me.
It is in this day and age. In my head, there are two Robert boys. One is an absolute gun, better than his old man, and one is trash. Yeah. And I like to think in a moment of Keegan-inspired inspiration, that Newcastle have plumped for the wrong one.
I think you might be onto something there, because I don't think he's made a first-team appearance for Montpellier. He's not played much football. And this chat very much is... It has to be coming from his agent, because apparently all the world and his wife are interested in signing this guy. He's like, oh, yeah, we've got interest from clubs. And they even brought in Scotland into it. You know, he's got some Scottish clubs.
Same agent as Marco Silva?
I think so. I really do. But I love the fact that they've put Newcastle at the top of the pile for obvious reasons.
Well, you see this with certain big stars, don't you? Like when Chelsea signed Eden Hazard, didn't they also get Thorgan Hazard as well?
Yeah. Mm. Donnarumma?
Was it Donnarumma?
I think Donnarumma at Milan. Did they not have to sign his older brother? I think.
Well, they did. They did. Yeah.
When Blackburn signed Roque Santa Cruz, they signed his brother as well.
Love that.
That's quite a good way in, isn't it? Just to have a more talented sibling.
Yeah.
Get yourself in there.
Work for the Charlton brothers.
Yeah.
Jack got a World Cup winners medal out of it, for crying out loud. There you are, ladies and gentlemen. Excellent. Sadly, we can't. We can't confirm at the moment whether Steve McLaren's going to be Dundee United manager this week, but my goodness.
I reckon he could do a good Scottish accent, actually.
Imagine if he does that. Yeah. That'd be excellent. So come on, Dundee United. Do the good thing.
The Dundee accent is a particular skill, as Marcus will tell you.
One of the best things to get a Dundonian to say is curly whirly.
Is that right? Yeah. Look, I can just imagine curly whirly. Well, I don't think that was very Dundee. Winston Churchill's old stomping ground, of course, Dundee. How about that?
It's all right.
Do your research, people. Do your research. Speaking of which, Jules, Pete and Luke are on the Football Ramble tomorrow, so something to look forward to there. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you very, very soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.